quite emotional while I was walking here because I didn't realize it was, it's been more than 3 years that this process has been in making, mid-2019 to be precise. And because we've all lost track of time, I quite didn't realize how long this journey has been already. So thank you very much for everyone who's here in person and for all the people who are joining us online. This launch is being hosted by the Center for the Study of Democracy, which is based in the School of Social Sciences at the University of Westminster. And the center undertakes a range of research in critical social and political, about social and political challenges and promoting an interdisciplinary research environment. You will hear more about our research in a second, but for now I want to hand over to Professor Dibyesh Anand, without whose help we wouldn't have been able to put this event together. Dibyesh is the head of school for social sciences, but he's also the co-chair of the university's EDI committee, the Equality, Diversity and Inclusion Committee, as well as the BME Network Committee. You can also read more about our speakers' bios, and there's a list of their publications online on the Eventbrite page. So if you want to check that out, please go on our Eventbrite page. Just a quick note before we proceed, we are not going to speak about specific cases of violence at this event, but if it does bring up anything for any of you, me and Jess, we're going to be around, so come and speak to us. But for people who are online, if it does bring up anything for you, we will be checking our email, which is femdialogue@gmail.com. which is FEMDIALOGUE. So please feel free to write to us and we will respond. And this event also has a code of conduct. So we are hoping that you've all engaged with it before the event. So thank you.
Thank you, Adrija, for inviting me here. So as Adrija said, I'm Professor Dibyesh Anand. My preferred pronouns are he and him. I'm head of School of Social Sciences, which is where partly it's co-located. It's also co-located with Media School. It's collaboration between two schools, and we are hosting Jessica, Adrija, and whoever else joins us in this project. And of course, that includes international partners. Now, Center for the Study of Democracy, which is the primary host of this event, is based in the school, and it was formed in 1989. It's quite old, if I'm not mistaken. It's oldest within the university, if not one of the oldest. It's quite old. We are known for our very critical work, but critical often did not mean something that goes beyond the West. So the way I would see is, even our center is on journey that goes beyond thinking of Europe as a site of all criticality and thinking of the rest of the world as simply a site where you do some investigation. That has changed for many years. And of course, if it had not changed, I would not be here. But we're very clear, a key theme for us is on decoloniality and post-coloniality. Now, so I'm here to welcome you to the center and check us out, Center for the Study of Democracy, University of Westminster. You'll find us here. Again, reach out to us, and of course, through Adrija and Jessica, but also, you know, directly to us. We do range of work, and we will keep expanding the kind of work we do. But as I said, being radical, being critical, but also being humane is at the heart of how I would say we function. Now, that's not written anywhere in the document that we are humane. But I'm pointing it out because in my own experience, we have noticed is sometimes radical and critical politics can itself be quite dehumanizing. We see the others as enemies, and we are the radical ones. We are trying to bring about change, and we often forget that we are dealing with other human beings. Right? So those kind of things, we do that. But also, I'd like to say a bit about our university, University of Westminster. Some of you are guests here, so it's for you. I'm one of the senior leaders in the university. I identify as queer. And when I say identify as queer, not only as gay, but queer in every sense. My own work is on challenging coloniality of China vis-a-vis Uyghurs and Tibetans, and of course, challenging coloniality of India vis-a-vis Kashmir. I see myself as, and I know colleagues here who also see themselves in some sense, if not, I'm putting words into your mouth, challenging those who challenge and question all the time. And our university is a space where I found that space. even while being in that management position, Adrija earlier called me line manager. And I thought, I don't like that word. But that's harsh reality. I'm line manager, right? So one has to balance between governance and creating more empowering space. So far, we're trying our level best within the university to do it. But the way I see this project, apart from the importance of the project for the world, for the UK, for higher education, it's also very important within the university. Because we, like all other institutions, we grapple with all kinds of challenges. We may have the right policies, We may have right policies, but not necessarily the right culture. We may develop the right culture, but if policies are not there to support, it would not work. The only way in which we can manage to get better and practice what we preach is if we are humble enough to acknowledge we don't always have it right, but we want to learn from others. So the way I see this is, this project is an opportunity for our university, for our center, is to learn not only from them, because they're part of us in any case, but also learn from those who engage with this as partners, sometimes without even not being partners, but by being visitors. Because the only way in which universities can fulfill the mission of being a space where everyone can breathe, I'm using the word breathe deliberately, be themselves, if it is also humble enough to acknowledge problems, challenge it, challenge prejudices, and then come up with practices and solutions that may work for all. Now, of course, we understand that not all approach will work for all. Context matters a lot. Context can be the cultural context, context can be country context, context with the higher education or some other corporate world you're dealing with. But the fact of the matter is, we, and I said Westminster, is open. We are open about learning from each other. So that's how I see the partnership part. And what final thing would I like to say to you is, look, welcome to all of you who are there online. I mean, whether I don't know whether you can see us or not. Online, those who are here, or you can see, I need to look better. My scars are straight, yeah, okay. For those of you online again, please keep in touch. Be part of the project. Help us, help the society, the place, the institution, and all institutions get better. And that, or at that note, because that is what for me decolonizing is and decolonization is. Oh, I'll end with that. So our university has a very clear commitment to decolonizing and diversifying. And I'm part of that commitment, making sure that's how commitment is. Because in my own experience, my work has been on post-colonial, decolonial. I often or sometimes found that in the name of decolonization, what was happening was even sometimes marginalization of less articulate voices from Global South. It was often about upper caste Indians. I include myself in that, by the way. Upper caste Indians or upper class, whatever, non-Western people taking this space and never talking about things that are taking place in whatever the cultural / country context. And you could have a decolonizing approach, which is very male gendered. So the reason we have within our decolonizing and diversifying both is because we should not be forced to choose between you want this or that. Do you want a most radical, white, straight, male person to lead your decolonizing agenda because maybe they have the right language? Or do you want to balance between that and recognizing that representations do matter? So we have no answers, but we're looking for answers. So hopefully those online and those in person will help us with that. And this project is part of it. But we are very proud to host you, Adrija and Jessica, and whoever else joins us later. It's important that we continue to support you and continue to support us. Thank you so much.
Hi, everyone. I'm going to introduce Adrija. So Dr. Adrija Day is leading this project. She's a senior research fellow at the School of Social Science and School of Media and Communication at the university here. And Adrija conducts research with a specific focus on the Global South and through a decolonial, abolitionist and intersectional feminist lens. And she's been a really vocal campaigner against sexual misconduct in higher education and currently is the director of the International Knowledge Exchange at the 1752 Group. And I also just want to acknowledge all the hard work Adrija has put in for the last 3 years, blood, sweat, and tears, and sheer determination and dedication, which is a huge accomplishment. So congratulations, Adrija, as well, for getting us here. And I'll hand over to you.
Thank you, everyone. And thank you, Jess, for... Yeah, I never know how to react to when my bio is being read. academics love a good acronym. I remember when I was writing this, first it was like researching sexual harassment, and the only acronym was RASH. But we've come up with something better. We're calling our project FEM Ideas. And one of the reasons why we wanted to call it FEM Ideas, because in our name, we wanted to very categorically cement and spell out our ideological commitments and groundings. And these are the principles that we are deeply, deeply committed to in this project. Beyond this, we are guided by a larger umbrella of gendered framework for analysis, learning from Black feminist and indigenous methodologies for research, and building solidarities across borders. And Jess will speak more about our methods in a second. As our name says, our project aims to develop survivor-centered, intersectional, decolonial, abolitionist theories and approaches to prevent and better respond to sexual violence within educational institutions. We aim to do this by bringing together insights, experiences, and activism from survivors, activists, practitioners, policymakers, in the Global South, specifically Chile, Brazil, South Africa, Nigeria, and indigenous communities of New Zealand. And you will also hear from some of our project partners a bit later in the evening. But what we aim to do in this research is to kind of shift the imperial geographies of knowledge production by specifically focusing on the lessons and movements from the Global South, but also thinking about how some of these lessons can be implemented here in the Global North. In this project, we also refused to be disciplined, had to get in a pun somewhere. We bring together various theoretical threads from different disciplines to weave together our narrative for change. It was also important to mention, because the first rejection of this project came because we couldn't be fit inside in a particular discipline. Xerxes Mendez, on speaking about the importance of abolitionist work, says that abolitionist philosophy has the well-being of humanity at its core. So when Mendez describes their work, they call their work as a contribution to the building of a living bridge, a metaphor introduced by community organizer Mia Mignis for describing the kind of slow work which spans over generations to build a movement to stop sexual violence in a meaningful, unsustainable way. We imagine our project and our work in the project to be another brick in that living bridge. So in finding ways forward, we're also deeply committed to transformative justice approaches, which are also considered to be decolonial feminist for all the ways in which they seek to respond to sexual and gendered violence through specific attentiveness to the root cause and conditions that enable it. And while we're talking about structural violence, before I proceed, I wanted to convey my personal support and the support of this project for the upcoming UCU strikes, but also to our comrades in Unison and other staff and workers who are currently on strike. Many of them are online today with us. Along with patriarchy, the working and living conditions of people and the violence of racial capitalism forms the foundation to understanding how sexual violence operates within institutions. Precarity, pay, pension, pay gap, and sexual violence are deeply, deeply interconnected. And any work on sexual violence is incomplete without taking into consideration the conditions that make such violence possible and acceptable in the first place. And continuing on the topic of capitalism, I often feel that one of capital's biggest wins is that it's killed our dream of an alternative. So I've always described this project as my dream of an alternative, that a better world is possible. But the more I think about it, I realize that this was never my dream alone. It was the dream of every activist, every comrade who's helped shape this work. It's the dream of every student across the world who are pushing back and breaking the shackles of capitalist academia. It is the dream of a group of international students who came together in 2018 to start the Account for This campaign to hold institutions accountable in the UK. It's the dream of Black, Brown, Indigenous students, of queer students and trans folks who are relentlessly campaigning to implement some of the best and the most progressive changes in the sector. It is the dream of groups like the 1752 group and my comrades who are fighting every day to make change. And I could go on and on and on, but most importantly, it is the dream of every survivor of sexual and gender-based violence in higher education. So this project is our
Hello,
collective
everyone,
dream.
And I'm so sorry, I can't be.
That's Alison, our mentor. And we learn and build on in this project on the tireless work of our comrades. So this project is built by a huge community of people coming together. And hence, every aspect of it also belongs to the community. Following Indigenous scholars and comrades, we define community as a structure that not only enables radical collectives and decolonizing feminist experiments, but also it's a space of collective joy, healing, and development. Finally, we want to disrupt some of the ways in which neoliberal academia is structured. We don't believe that research is or can ever be individual. So we bring a community together to build this research. And following the works of Maori scholar Linda Smith, we aim to incorporate ethical procedures within our project to report back to our community. We believe that theory which is not put into practice is absolutely redundant. So theory and practice speak to each other in every aspect of this project. All the knowledge that we produce in this project is copyleft. So all our major documents, our forms, everything that we produced will be uploaded on our project website that academics, activists, practitioners across the world can access. So you don't have to, so people who don't have the resources, they don't have to start this work from scratch. They have the resources available to them. We are building an archive of policy, practice, and theory, particularly from the Third World and the Global South, to make louder and louder the voices which are silenced or lost in academia in the Global North. We are bringing together an advisory group of academics, practitioners, and activists from across the world to not only hold us accountable, but also to give us direction. We are bringing together a group of survivors to review all our questionnaires, our surveys, our focus groups materials to ensure that survivor voices and needs remain at the core of everything that we do. We also want to start a fellowship program specifically for survivors of sexual violence who've been pushed out of academia. We want to bring together academics and practitioners who can review and provide feedback on CVs and SOPs and proposals for survivors. Many of our friends in the Global South, they don't have resources such as access to journal articles or books. So through this project, we also want to use our privilege to redistribute and provide some of those resources to our comrades, friends, and sisters. But also, this is our way of sending out a very clear message to perpetrators and institutions to say that if you want to push survivors out, there are many, many people around the world who are not going to let that happen anymore. And while we try to do a lot of things differently, there is obviously there are times when we're going to stumble and when we're going to fall. And this is when we urge all of you, our community who's joined us online and here, is to hold us accountable, to point out our mistakes, to tell us what we can do differently, to tell us what we can do better, share ideas, thoughts, stories, resources. If you're working in this space, it's a very, very lonely space. It's also a space which is filled with a lot of trauma. So don't think you're alone. Even if it is to share some coffee and cake, we are here. But also we are here to think together, to work together, to build a new world together. Bear with me a little while longer. while I say some thank yous. Simon, for actually telling me about this grant and for believing in this project, when not a lot of people did, including myself. Dibyesh, for always having our back and for supporting us through everything and our crazy ideas. We learned from you on how to be a better manager, but also how to be a better member of our academic community. Anastasia and Radha, who are online, for supporting me from day one and for finding this project a home. Alison Phipps, our mentor, who's also online, thank you for being so, so generous with your time and your comments. Alice and Michaela, for all your support and advice. Our colleagues in Camry and Social Sciences for welcoming Jess and me so warmly in the university community. Our colleagues in HR and support services, Lenny, Rochelle, Anne, who continuously support this project. Our colleagues in security and cleaning for being the warmest presence, but also reminding me to water my plants. They are the only two plants in my entire lifetime that I haven't killed, but also scolding me for every time that I'm late to work. Anna Bull for providing the most critical and honest comments and for your continued support for the project. But every single person who's read my draft, who's read the proposal, who's put in their time, love, and labor into writing response, helping me prep for interviews, this project belongs to all of you. Jess, for being my fellow traveler in this wild ride. And to all our friends, comrades, sisters, family, and partners. We're so happy that some of you are here and online. Thank you is too small a word for all the ways in which you hold us, nurture us, and grow us. But what we would like to say is how grateful we are to all of you for your continuous support, care, love, affection, wisdom, reflection, lessons. And we promise to pass on the same love, care, generosity to others in our community as well. You teach us every day on how to be better. And finally, we owe this research to survivors who've given us their time and labor in retelling stories of violence and trauma, but also of love and dissent. This is our way of giving back to you, to create fractures, to disrupt existing narratives, and to build change. To you, we owe everything. And on that note, I'm going to invite Jess to come and speak a little more about the project. As I said, Jess is my co-traveler in this journey. She's a postdoc fellow at the School of Social Sciences and the School of Media and Communications. She has a background in conducting feminist, intersectional, participatory, survivor-led research in the field of gender-based violence with a specific focus on gender politics of prevention and intervention. So Jess, thank you.
Thank you, Adrija. Just to say, if you've just joined us, please feel free to grab a drink. We have a lot of wine to get through. And if you're already here, go for a second round or help yourself to nibbles as well. So I'm just going to kind of speak a little bit about the theoretical underpinnings of the methodological approach we're using and just kind of touch on and expand some of the points that Adrija has already touched on to really kind of explore or discuss really why we've placed survivors at the forefront of all of this work. And I wanted to start with just a couple of quotes, one from a participant in my own research and then one from Judith Herman, who I'm sure many of you, her work you're probably aware of. And we chose these quotes really because they capture kind of the essence of what we're seeking to achieve when it comes to participants' involvement. namely to create new spaces and opportunities in which to hear the voices of people whose lived experience of sexual and gender-based violence in higher education can be heard, spaces in which lived experiences are affirmed and located as epistemologically vital in knowledge and theory formation and in the development of new ways of working and policies that govern this space. Because we know that so often survivors' experience of sexual and gender-based violence in higher education, and indeed outside of it, are often not disclosed or heard, and if they are, they're not adequately responded to, if they're responded to at all. So we believe really that it's crucial that this is, as we approach the project, this is, should be our starting point, while also recognising the real and complex challenges politically, practically, speaking out involves, and of course the ethical considerations of asking people to do so. And importantly, we know that experience-based narratives function as a really key mechanism for individuals who are typically excluded from knowledge production to take control of their own representation and for amplifying what we kind of understand as situated and subjugated knowledges. And with this, we're better equipped to respond to the social justice objectives of the study, which really drive it forward by surfacing these new kind of discourses and narratives and challenging the dominant ones that Adrija was talking about. Would you mind moving to the next slide, please? So just kind of more of the, elemental components of the study then. And in order to achieve the kind of core aim of survivor focus, we draw heavily on kind of feminist participatory action-based research approaches and trauma-informed practices, which, you know, in basic terms means critically acknowledging the role trauma occupies in the lives of many of our participants. And with that, really, kind of, as Adrija has already discussed, we're locating participants not only in kind of problem posing, but also critically in problem solving, and really kind of drawing on the ethos of participatory methods, which recognize that people are experts in their own lives. So it very much is a collaborative, inclusive endeavor. And again, as Adrija has noted, a key aim really is to shift the lens through which we typically view sexual and gender-based violence in higher education, and indeed the way that institutions are conceptualized and understood and their role within this. So we do this really by foregrounding these voices and perspectives, especially of those that are underrepresented. So survivors, practitioners, activists, academics, with an explicit focus on those from the Global South, and centering the knowledge of those that have been and continue to be marginalized through colonialism and ongoing colonial logics. And really, we understand that it's only with this type of approach that possibilities for radical intersectional social change and transformation are possible or might be achieved. And we're bringing these voices of survivors kind of into relation or triangulated with those of university personnel, practitioners, and activists. And I think it's important to note here that when we say university personnel, we're using that term kind of as expansively as possible to kind of refer to any person employed or participating in the university kind of system or structure, ranging from academics, faculty, to cleaning services, to security, to catering, and so on. Because we recognize that, you know, sexual and gender-based violence does not occur in isolation. It crosses structural, hierarchical boundary lines within institutional spaces, and we really therefore want to hear from all of these voices. And of course, practically speaking, we will put measures in place to manage the kind of the power dynamics that we know that are in operation within these spaces, and that will be done through kind of various different kind of mechanisms, which I won't go too deep into the methodology, but if anyone is interested, we can talk more about that. But essentially, as you know, as this slide shows, and I know Adrija has already referred to these kind of advisory groups, we're seeking to kind of ensure that we've built processes into the methodology to ensure we're accountable as researchers, and that we're answerable to the people that are involved in our research, first and foremost survivors. We've also tried to ensure that there are various ways of taking part, of feeding in, so there isn't just one kind of channel, again, to be as inclusive as we possibly can, while recognising there'll always be kind of further work to do in that regard. We will also, everything that we do implement will be attuned to the context in which it's taking place. So we, as you know, we have the 5 country sites. We've been working really closely with partners in those sites, some of whom you will be hearing from today. And of course, there's a whole host of considerations around ethics. I won't go into that tonight, but if anyone is interested, I do have another slide, but I won't go on to that now, but we're very happy to talk about those if that's something people are interested in. And I think at this point, we'll open it up to questions in the room if there's anything that's sprung to mind before we move on to hearing from some of our partners.
Yeah, if you have any questions, comments, we accept cheering, sloganing, anything. But if not,
yeah,
we will have more time for questions in the end,
yeah,
as well. Again, feel free to go and grab wine. There's a, yeah, lot of it.
Please do.
I'm going to quickly check online as well, because there are loads of people who are online, just to see if there are any comments or questions there. Again, people online, if you have any questions, comments, please share with us on the chat, and we will take it at take it in the end. But at this point, then, should we just move on? We're going to hear from our mentor, Alison Phipps. Alison couldn't be here in person, but I think Alison is there on the call right now, but she's on childcare duty. She sent us very generously a little recorded message for us to play, which we're going to play in a second. But we are so grateful that Alison is the mentor for our project. For many of us, it is her work, probably, that she started about a decade ago, that set us off in this journey of wanting to do things differently around the research of sexual violence in higher education. Alison has, she's currently co-leading the Feminist Gender Equality Network's Gender-Based Violence Group, and is one of the patrons of the Associations of Gender Studies in Africa. She's also recently joined a new collective that many of us here are a part of, called Abolition Feminism for Ending Sexual Violence, along with her Newcastle colleagues. So here's Alison.
Here in person, I'm absolutely delighted to be supporting Adrija and Jess with this important project. I've sent a video as I'm on childcare duty this evening, but I'll try to zoom in live.
Switching on and switching off always helps. Why not? The next step would be banging the computer, which I will do.
What are we doing?
No idea. Let's try all.
And I've probably tried every single method you can think of to use the master's tools to dismantle the master's house. The failures of my own activism eventually brought me to abolition, and it's great to see abolitionist and decolonial approaches start to permeate the mainstream of the UK movement through projects such as this. The carceral focus of sexual violence activism in Britain is deeply inflected with whiteness, and I mean whiteness as a historical, social, economic, political, and cultural structure, not an identity or the colour of anyone's skin. Political whiteness refers to modes of political action that combine victimhood and supremacy, grounded in fear and threat, and seeking redress for individual injuries through the power of the institution or the state. Now, the university is not the state, but it's not the state either. Universities are central to flows of dispossession and accumulation, and deeply embedded in state capitalist exploitation and violence, including post 9/11 border and counter-terrorism regimes. The university is also a key site of modern distributed governmentality. The white feminist attachment to institutional governance can be seen as a flight from vulnerability in the absence of other viable options. Set within what Lauren Berlant might call genres of crisis, focused on both sexual violence in universities and the labour relations of the institution itself. But like state feminism, this governance feminism produces collateral damage. Black students in the US are disproportionately represented in student discipline cases, queer academics are more likely to be accused of sexual misconduct, and safeguarding agendas in women's sport have led to outcomes that exclude trans and other marginalized women. Like appealing to the state, asking the institution to keep us safe protects some at the expense of others. It's also difficult to see how the web of risk management and regulation in British universities, policies, checklists, benchmarks, case management processes, codes of conduct, is improving relationships in our institutions. It's mostly being spun by paid consultants, and activists have to marshal our creativity and empathy in the service of administration. And as the threads tighten, they create a securitization of the campus, which is characteristic of the US, but which is creeping into Britain as well, and which associates sexual violence work with reactionary agendas such as PREVENT. That's why it's important to broaden our frame of reference, which Adrija's project seeks to do through learning from the epistemologies and practices of Global South activists. These are grounded in collective action and anti-colonial resistance, see the institution for what it is, and understand gender as co-constituted with race through sexual violence and for the ends of racial capitalism. And when we understand the role of sexual violence in racial capitalism and position against white supremacy rather than seeking power within it, we can no longer cling to the state or institution and must build alternatives instead. As Angela Davis, Gina Dent, Beth Ritchie, and Erica Miners write in their book, Abolition Feminism Now, abolition must be international because capitalism is global. And alongside exporting economic exploitation, it exploits carceral ideologies as part of a protection racket that keeps us under control. The pincer movement between interpersonal gender violence and state violence is deeply colonial. Sexual violence is a bordering project through acts that keep us afraid and imputations that tell us we should actually be fearing the dangerous other over there. When we reframe violence to include state, colonial, and institutional violence, and reframe safety as a collective relation rather than an individual possession, it helps us ask different questions. I'm so looking forward to supporting and learning from this project. Adrija and Jess are both absolute stars, and I think they have a huge amount to contribute to sexual violence scholarship and practice. I hope you all have a wonderful evening, and I'll see you on Zoom.
Thank you, Alison. Is Alison there now? Oh, thank you, Alison, for sending us the video and for all the encouragement and generosity that you show to us and the project. Next, we were meant to hear from our project partner in South Africa, but due to some unavoidable last-minute circumstances, she's not able to join us today. So we're going to move on to our next video. It's another short video. I think Caroline might be on the call as well, but Caroline is our project partner from Brazil, Sao Paulo. I'm not going to even try to pronounce the name of the university and butcher it, but she was here last week and she very kindly recorded a little video in support of the project and telling us about why this project is important from the context of Brazil. And we're just going to get it up in a sec. And while we're waiting, please grab wine and nibbles.
Hey. Hello, everyone. I'm super happy to stay here in a video with you. And I'm pleased to support this project as a partner, the project about decolonizing sexual and gender-based violence in higher education, especially in Brazil.
With our colleagues online.
And for me, it's really important to talk more about this subject because the last 4 years we had disinvestment in higher education. At the same time, we had a government that was really misogynist. So, this kind of subject was hiding more and more in the last years. And at the same time, we have a huge movement that women that don't agree with this violence more in university context. And it's really important to talk out sex harassment in universities. And for me, it's important to understand because in Brazil, decolonize is important because in Brazil, gender was based in colonization. So when you're talking about white and black indigenous people, every time this kind of layer change when you mean gender. So it's not one gender, it's not essential gender. And we have so many layers, so you need this kind of research to understand more how you can provide policies in university and in how ways we can navigate to that. For example, of course, we have a huge problem that women suffer sexual harassment, but at the same time, we need to understand,
for example, that black guys, they are constructed by, are forged by violent guys. So at some point have different ways to power that, for example, have kids that they are accused to be a sex, perpetrate some kind of violence. And they just agree with that because it's a black guy and sometimes it's not the point. So what I mean, it's like, it's not just about women, it's about how gender is constructed and how you can understand deeply this situation. And of course, when we saw sex harassment, we have a lot of women that suffer violence. And you have high, and in Brazil, you have a high number from different kinds of violence, and you keep in hiding this conversation. So, university, it's not different because sometimes we understand the university like a political place, and this, because you have a lot of scientists there, it's not, we really believe that's a safe place, but it's not. For me, it's more how we can navigate these powers in university, understand that gender. It's a way to construct power. So sometimes it's not just about if you are a professor and a student, but how these relations happen with your colleagues sometimes. So it's not about hierarchy inside the university. It's more look at the gender hierarchy and in a intersectionality way, of course. So I'm also happy that I support this project in, because now we have a different government. So this also can give more hope for us to try to change things and create. Because when Adrija asked me about Brazil, I just say, oh, Adrija, you know that in Brazil you don't have a lot of policies inside the university that support the sex, the report about sex harassment. So I think it's the way that for create this policy, and I really hope that I like to hope election, as Paulo Freire believes, So I really hope in action that this project can help us to change a little things or a huge things. So is that, I'm glad to be part of that. And thank you so much.
That was Caroline, our project partner from Brazil. Along with Caroline, we have project partners in South Africa, Nigeria, Chile, and New Zealand. I think that's about it. Jess, do you have any closing remarks, comments? You don't have to.
I don't think I do. Just an apology, really, for my poor
you did tech. Great.
Transitions between things, but
no, you did great. Anything that didn't work was a capitalist conspiracy, so it's fine.
There you go.
Trying to stop us, that's the line we are taking. But thank you again, everyone. There's a lot of comrades and friends online who've joined us.
Yeah, and I was going to say, if you have any questions and including your colleagues online, please pop them in the chat.
But you also have, like, we're going to be around, so, like, grab us, ask us, have a drink with us. People online, if you want to carry on this conversation, you have our email, so, like, feel free to email us anytime. We can set up a Zoom call, we can meet in person. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for joining us. And again, a big thank you to every single friend, comrade, academic, practitioner, survivor who's walked so far with us in this journey and who continue to walk with us. Again, this project belongs to all of you. We're looking forward to where this takes us. And hopefully see you soon in our next event. If you want to, we will post about all our events on our Twitter, which as of this morning is Fem Ideas. It's Fem_Ideas. So follow us on Twitter. We'll keep, if Twitter lasts, which I highly doubt it will. And before we, you know, until we find another more community-led social platform where we can connect with others, we are on Twitter. Have a great evening. Thank you for coming.